Well, as we've been moving along in the Gospel of John, we are here the week before Easter, and there is an important question to ask, and really it's been asked historically as well, and that is, who killed Jesus? There are a lot of potential characters here. We know from the scripture the devil was involved. He was the one that inspired Judas. Judas was involved. The Jewish authorities were involved, and the Romans were involved. Asking that question usually only leads us to a lot of trouble. In fact, for many people throughout history, and sorry to say, particularly historically among the Christian community, the finger has often been pointed at the Jews. And as a result, it's had a terrible effect on attitudes for over centuries about Jewish people. And even in the church for many centuries, they have been the brunt of a lot of bad attitudes and bad actions because of this belief that, well, we know who killed Jesus. It was the Jews. In fact, I was just doing a little research, just to kind of find some key statements in church history that really give us an idea that this is often kind of been where things have gone. For one, just back in the 400s, I have a quote from St. Augustine who wrote, "The true image of the Hebrew is Judas Iscariot, who sells the Lord for silver. The Jew can never understand the scriptures and forever will bear the guilt for the death of Jesus." And in case you think that was a short-lived perspective, let me give you, putting together here, a quote from one of the popes back in the 1200s, who said this in a letter to the archbishops of Sens and Paris: "The Jews, by their own guilt, are consigned to perpetual servitude because they crucified the Lord. As slaves rejected by God, in whose death they wickedly conspire, they shall, by the effect of this very action, recognize themselves as the slaves of those whom Christ's death set free." Sentiments like that can result in very harsh attitudes and behavior on the part of people. The problem is it totally misses the question itself, let alone the answer, totally misses the reality and point of what was happening in Jesus' death. Because what we see is that, and the Gospel of John keeps making this point over and over again, it's not about who killed Jesus. The reality is Jesus was in control of his life and willingly gave up his life for our sakes. I mean, if you think about it just logically, why be angry forever with people involved in the death of Jesus when we needed Jesus' death? That death had a great effect for us. One of the things we've been seeing through the Gospel of John, and if you continue to read, you'll see, John makes it abundantly clear that no one took Jesus' life from him. He freely gave it. And so if that is the reality, if that is the point, then it really doesn't matter who killed Jesus. In Raymond Brown's commentary that I've been using through the study of John, he said, "Jesus went to death as the sole master of his own destiny. There's no one to decry. There's no one to blame. There's no one to be mad at. Jesus willingly, purposely went to his death for what he knew he had been sent for and it could accomplish for us." Just make a couple references. John 14:30. Jesus says, "I cannot talk with you much longer because the ruler of this world is coming. He has no power over me." Or in John 10, verse 18, and this again, Jesus says, "No one takes my life away from me. I give it up of my own free will. I have the right to give it up, and I have the right to take it back." And so when we get later into John 19, where we're going to be focusing today, you see this explanation, this statement. In John 19, verses 28 through 30, it says, later, and he's talking about Jesus here, knowing that all was now completed, and so that the scripture would be fulfilled, Jesus said, I am thirsty. A jar of wine vinegar was there, so they soaked a sponge in it, put the sponge on a stalk of the hyssop plant, and lifted it to Jesus' lips. When he had received the drink, Jesus said, it is finished. And with that, he bowed his head and gave up his spirit. Now, let me clarify one thing historically here, because if you've read the other Gospels, you'll come to realize there were actually two attempts to offer Jesus drink while he was on the cross. And the first one was laced with essentially a drug that was used at times in order to kind of numb people's pain, and Jesus refused that. This sounds horrible to us, wine with vinegar, but it was essentially cheap wine that ordinary people would drink simply to quench their thirst. And that's what they were offering to Jesus, and he took when he was on the cross. But the thing that I want us to see, and I don't want to take a lot of time with this today, is Jesus knew what he was doing. And the language that John uses and what he tells us is to try to make sure we get that and know that Jesus' life was not robbed from him. No one forcibly took it from him. He starts out saying, knowing that all was completed. He had realized in that moment that he had done what he came to do. And knowing that there was a scripture to be fulfilled, he sets it in motion by saying, I am thirsty. And then as was prophesied in the Old Testament, they offer him this drink on a sponge. When he receives the drink, he declares, okay, it's finished. I am done. And the language says, after saying this, with that, he bowed his head and he gave up his spirit. It doesn't even just simply say Jesus died. It doesn't say their plan was finally completed and they killed him. On his terms, Jesus completes the task that he came to do on earth, and he willingly gives up his spirit. In fact, I think it's in the Gospel of Luke, it says he gave up his spirit into the hands of the Father. This is not a person whose life was taken from them. This is a person who willingly gave his life. One of the things we have to understand about Gospels is they are kind of a combination, historical, theological in their nature. They are trying to teach us, to help us understand who God is, who Jesus is, and what he's doing. But unlike the letters when we read, they don't usually come out and explain it to you. You know, if you're going to read the Apostle Paul, in many places he'll tell you, oh, this is why Jesus died, and this is the meaning of it, and he had to do this for this reason, and now if you will do this. The Gospels, for the most part, don't do that. And John leaves out a lot of information that's in the other Gospels, but then includes some very unique and particular things that he wanted us to know. Because what's going to happen for us is not by explanation, but in reading the account of Jesus' death in John, by the very fact of what happened and what didn't happen, and how his death occurred, we are going to understand who Jesus is and why his death was important and necessary and what it was accomplishing for us. And so really what I want to do this morning is just describe to you, tell you what's in John's gospel and how just that information helps us to know who Jesus is and what was transpiring in his death. And the very first thing that we see is that Jesus' kingship is asserted in his death. And it comes from, who would have thought, but from Pilate himself. In John chapter 19, beginning at verse 19, it says, Pilate had a notice prepared and fastened to the cross, which is also one of the reasons, you know, they crucify people in a variety of ways. And the cross took at least three different potential shapes. And the fact that Jesus, the inscription was put above him, makes sense that in his case, it was a crossbar that was below the top where the inscription could be placed above him. He had an inscription prepared and fastened it to the cross. It read, "Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews." Many of the Jews read this sign, for the place where Jesus was crucified was near the city. And the sign was written, and it could be Hebrew or Aramaic here, but in this translation that I'm using, and the sign was written in Aramaic, Latin, and Greek. The chief priests of the Jews protested to Pilate, "Do not write the King of the Jews, but that this man claimed to be the King of the Jews." Pilate answered, "What I have written, I have written. I am not changing it." In fact, that inscription was considered a legal document. And he put it this way, and he said, "I am not going to change it." In his death, this man, Jesus of Nazareth, is known. He is the King of the Jews. And it's not just for the Jews to know, it's for everyone to know. So that he puts it in three languages. The people of Palestine would have either been speaking Aramaic or Hebrew, but the official Roman language was Latin. And the common language of all peoples in the Roman Empire for commerce and interaction, no matter where you were from, was Greek. And so whether he did it, you know, advertently or inadvertently, Pilate made sure that everyone who was in that place, whether they were a Jew or a Gentile, whether they were from Jerusalem or from the farthest edges of the Roman Empire, they could read it and they would know it was declared, "Jesus of Nazareth is the King of the Jews." You know, Pilate could have put an insurgent who rebelled against Caesar, a criminal guilty of breaking the Roman law. But instead, the insignia for all to see and for all of us to know throughout all history, Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews. And it kind of also fulfills, in a sense, something Jesus had said earlier in his ministry in John chapter 12. He said, "When I am lifted up from the earth, I will draw everyone to me." You know, he's in this obscure place in the world. To us, you know, Jerusalem, Israel, reading the Bible is like the center of the universe. It was not the center of the known world. And you would imagine that this lonely Jewish prophet or rabbi would die in obscurity. But he says that when I am lifted up, I will draw all men to him, to me. And in the very act, the very moment of his death, it's declared in all the languages necessary for all the people to be able to read it and understand who he was. And then an interesting thing happens in his death. In John 19, verse 38 and 39, and I may have to tell you who these folks are, but it says later, this is once they knew that Jesus had died, later Joseph of Arimathea asked Pilate for the body of Jesus. Now Joseph was a disciple of Jesus, but secretly because he feared the Jews. He was accompanied by Nicodemus, the man who earlier had visited Jesus at night. In John's gospel, the thing of notoriety about Nicodemus, and it's said at least three different times, oh, he's a guy that went out at night. In other words, he's the chicken. He's a guy that wanted to believe but didn't want anybody else to know that he believed because he would have been thrown out of the synagogue. And apparently Joseph of Arimathea also was a secret believer. But the secret was out. These men came out publicly in the very death of Jesus and offered themselves to take his body and take care of him. Well, the other thing about Joseph and Nicodemus is they were members of the Sanhedrin, which was the official authoritative body for the Jews, who in fact were the ones that wanted to have Jesus crucified. And here we have in the moment of his death realizing that even his slayers believed and were coming to faith in him and demonstrating their belief in Jesus. "When I am lifted up, I will draw all men to myself." He truly is the King, and not only of the Jews, but of all peoples. For John's gospel, the significance in our understanding of Jesus' death really hinges on this next section in chapter 19, and it goes from verses 31 through 37. Now, I want to tell you this. As I was reading various commentaries and commentaries referring to other commentators, it seemed like most people were centering on this little phrase that says, blood and water poured out. And the rage of the debate is, what did that mean? Why did John say this? Well, did he really see blood and water? Is blood and water a symbol for John? Because in 1 John, he also mentions blood and water and the Spirit. What is the meaning of this symbol? This must be the key. But I actually think it's a lot more straightforward than that. I do think the key is in what John saw about the way Jesus died. And he wants us to know, I saw it. I saw it with my own eyes. You can trust me. This is how it happened. And if this is how it happened, this is what we can know about Jesus and who he was and what was happening in the moment of his death. So let me read for you in John 19, 31 through 37. And this is in the New International Version translation. Now it was the day of preparation, and they're talking about preparation for Passover. And the next day was to be a special Sabbath. Because the Jews did not want the bodies left on the cross, bodies, because you know there were three men that were crucified at the same time, Jesus in the middle of those. They did not want the bodies left on the crosses during the Sabbath. They asked Pilate to have the legs broken and the bodies taken down. Now, apparently that was very common, to break the legs of someone who was crucified. One thing it did is it rapidly brought on death, because typically it was a long death. And essentially in the end, as they would lack strength, or if they bled out, depending on what else was happening to them, they could no longer breathe and they would die of suffocation. But as long as they had their legs and any strength, they might be able to push themselves up and relieve the pressure on the diaphragm so they could continue to breathe. And they didn't want their death prolonged, so they sent these soldiers out to break their legs. The soldiers, therefore, came and broke the legs of the first man who had been crucified with Jesus, and then those of the other. But when they came to Jesus and found that he was already dead, they did not break his legs. Instead, one of the soldiers pierced Jesus' side with a spear, bringing a sudden flow of blood and water. Now, let's just stop for a second. I realize, you know, crucifixion was a very torturous death. But the thing we need to understand, too, is that is not where the gospel writers focus. They could have described it in detail. They could have explained even the little thing that I explained to you about breaking legs and breathing, but they're not interested in that.